The content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors. Great companies like Sun Warrior. Sun Warrior is a premium, all-natural, raw superfood company dedicated to providing the best vegan, plant-based protein powders and supplements. Go to sunwarrior.com to learn more about all of their products and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. Crazy Water, the only mineral water bottled in Texas. Enviromedica, makers of Terra Flora, a novel broad-spectrum symbiotic formulated with a combination of spore-form probiotics and advanced food-based ancient prebiotics. Wild Foods, small batch superfoods from around the world. Use the code OLR for 20% off. Wild Foods was founded out of an obsession with finding the best ingredients in the world to support health and longevity. Paleo Magazine, the well-being journal and the International Society of Sports Nutrition. Be sure to go to our Thorne Research Dispensary on our website for 20% off all their products and free shipping. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio. Everyone, do you want to go higher, baby? Oh my gosh, it's difficult to say that. I keep saying that. That's my intro. It's been my intro for many, many years, but it's difficult to say that right now when I know so many people are just so lost and going through so much difficulty. But Ronaldo Davis and I are here to live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia. So if you feel inclined, give us a call. We're here to help you. You know, we want to help anytime. So call us, communicate. That's what life's about, communication. So let's get through this together. Our number is 214-787-1190. That's 214-787-1190. We have an amazing show coming up for you. Before we get to that, I want to let our listener know that called yesterday when we were talking about lavender oil to ease anxiety that I checked out with Jill. You know, I asked Jill, what should I say? Because I was looking for a particular brand and or the best, you know, available. Mm-hmm. Haven't found it yet, Ronaldo. But I do know this, that it comes from France. Okay. I do know that. Several people I talked to, the Well-Being Journal yesterday, they said that it comes from France. We're trying to identify what the best brand is, and I'll get back to you. But Jill said, really any brand, as long as it's pure lavender essential oil and doesn't have any added perfumes, or it's not synthetic lavender, which is called Lavadin. I didn't know that. And that the person needs to read the ingredients, part of the label, to determine that. So not the front of the label. Read the ingredients and see. But again, no synthetic lavender called Lavadin and no added perfumes. All right. Pretty good stuff, right?
Good. Yes.
I can't wait to find it myself because, you know, I have a little anxiety. You know, I think everybody does at this point. There's just a lot going on, and anything natural is always better than something, you know, that's chemical or pharmaceutical, in my opinion. But we have a fantastic show today. We've got somebody who's been on the show a long time ago, Dr. Stephen Schwartz. He's an amazing medical doctor. Let me tell you about him here in just a second. We also have V. Capaldi coming up and Tina Burnett. We're going to be talking about navigating anxiety. So I'll be sure to mention the lavender oil to V. Capaldi and Tina Burnett, exercise and your immune system. But Dr. Stephen Schwartz, I love this man. He's on the line. He is a licensed family physician with more than 25 years of experience. And through his passion for health and wellness, Dr. Schwartz dedicates himself full time to the development of products to keep families healthy through the use of safe and natural ingredients. Dr. Schwartz graduated from Duke University with a degree in biological chemistry and earned a Doctor of Medicine degree from the Duke University School of Medicine. He is a fellow of the American Academy of Family Physicians. And here's some other interesting stuff about Dr. Schwartz. He chaired the Regional Pandemic Preparedness Committee from 2005 to 2008, and he has developed numerous products and software and even an auto burglar alarm. And he also has formulated a homeopathic formulation to combat the cold and flu virus. And I have it here in my hand, Flunata, cold and flu relief. I've used it for years. I believe in the product so much. that I have it on auto ship on Amazon.com. And it's such an honor to introduce you. How are you doing today, Dr. Schwartz?
Hey, good morning, Bernadette. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Well, you know, let's talk about this. We had decided that we were going to talk about the family safe room and what the do's and don'ts are and a lot of other things. So let's start with this. So, you know, people are creating these family safe rooms in their homes to protect their families. So what exactly is a family safe room and why should we designate one in our home?
Well, now that everybody's on quarantine, the entire family's in the same household looking at each other.
Right.
And if one of them is sick, what do you do? That's what the safe room is all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. And so, you know, so why should we? So I guess that's, I just answered my own question, or you answered it. Well, that's why we should designate one in our homes for our, just our safety. But what are the do's and don'ts? Are there any big do's and don'ts?
Yes, there are. So the safe room really, it's a concept of having some supplies ready. And one of the do's and don'ts is to get everything in advance and almost have it in a zip kit that you can open when you need it, and then you put it back when you're done. Because when somebody's sick, it's really difficult to go out and get everything. But if you wait too much time, the virus can spread.
Mm-hmm.
There's about six main rules that you should use when you set up or are implementing a safe room.
Okay.
First one is that no one goes inside the room except the caretaker and the sick person.
Okay.
The second is that the sick person doesn't eat common meals with the other household members.
Mm-hmm.
They will be served the meals in the safe room. The other, no toys should be left in the safe room without being sanitized.
Yep.
Otherwise, they can go out to the rest of the household.
Well, you know, that makes me think of the famous book, The Velveteen Rabbit. Do you remember that book?
I have not had the privilege of reading that one.
Doggone it. Well, it's a book about a little boy who gets sick, and it might have been, I don't know, it was one of those big diseases like back in the early 1900s, like malaria or typhoid fever or something like that, and he was sick for many weeks, and anyway, his little rabbit that he loved on all the time actually wore it down to where it was nothing but threads, had to be burnt in a fire, and it's a beautiful book. It's actually a great family book to read during these times. It's a really good book, and it's called The Velveteen Rabbit. Anyway, I'll send you a copy. How about that?
That would be fantastic.
It'll be my gift. Okay.
Yes.
Well, let's continue on with this. So you said no one else goes in the room beside the sick person and the caretaker, and there's no common meals, and then you said no toys. And what's next on this list?
The caretaker should always use mask and gloves when entering.
Okay.
You need to adhere to the 6-foot rule at all times.
Okay.
And so that's one principle. And then a nightly wipe down of the safe room and anything that the sick person may have contacted outside the safe room.
Wow.
You can keep the wipes outside of the safe room and or even 70% isopropyl alcohol in a spray container.
Wow. I was trying to write as quickly as I could while you were speaking. So number four is mask and gloves. When entering the room and that you dispose of after you leave the room, or maybe even if you're short on maybe a mask, you can, necessity is the mother of invention. Use something else, even a flannel shirt or something to tie around your face, right?
Well, you can use what you can get a hold of, and we can talk about that more because there's certain things that are better than others. And if you don't have anything, there's a way to make something out of common household materials that actually could work pretty well.
Oh, wow.
But generally, we recommend an N95 mask and put it in a paper bag when you're done.
Okay.
And just leave it in the paper bag. It'll dry out. And you use it. You can use it once a day with a new one. But now that there's a shortage, you can really use it for several weeks as long as it doesn't get crumpled or distorted. The main thing is that it doesn't get wet. So if you keep it in a paper bag, nobody can touch it, and it can dry out nicely in the paper bag. And that's actually the best practices in the hospital. That's what people in the hospital are doing, emergency room physicians,
oh, wow.
Nurses, They put it in a paper bag and label it because there's a shortage right now.
Mm-hmm. And you said nightly wipe down. So what does that look like? That sounds like a pretty big job. Like, what do you really need to wipe down? And can you do that by also, you know, supplementing it with spraying Lysol? Or is that probably not a good idea if somebody's sick so they won't inhale anything?
Well, yeah, you can wipe down. And the main thing is to use common sense inside the room. Don't go crazy. The most important thing is people won't always stay in the room. They may go out. They may touch something, a door handle, or some other things. So every night you want to go around the whole house in anything potentially that was contaminated, either wipe it down or spray it with, say, some 70% isopropyl alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
What about? And that way you start the next day with a clean slate.
Right. What about a clipboard with paper and pen for writing down like a daily log?
Oh, that would be fantastic. Absolutely.
You know, like taking
your
temperature.
And the main thing on that is, like the nurses do, you leave it in the room. It doesn't go out of the room. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't take a chance of, you know, introducing contamination to the rest of the household with the pen attached.
Well, and how do you know how long someone should stay in the room? How do you know when they're safe? When, like, their fever has broke?
Well, one rule of thumb is at least 24 hours after fever and until there are no symptoms. Some people can shed viruses even after the fever is gone. And that's spread through coughing, sneezing, and also excessive talking.
Wow. That's interesting. That's really interesting. Okay, so what are some other basic items or equipment that you might need in that family safe room?
Well, you need a disposable trash can, and at best is one of the ones that operates with a foot pedal.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you can get things in there quickly without touching anything else. Gloves are important. The mask is important. An eye shield is important. Some basic medications are important. Now, in terms of the gloves, there's many types of gloves out there. You kind of want to shy away from the vinyl gloves because they're somewhat porous and they can allow the transmission of viruses. The latex is much, much better.
Okay. Well, you know what? We're going to go to break for station identification. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this. Dr. Schwartz is staying with us. We're so happy to have him on board today. Everyone, stay tuned. You're listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, and I have Dr. Steve Schwartz on the line. He is a licensed family physician with more than 25 years of experience, and through his passion for health and wellness, Dr. Schwartz dedicates himself full-time to the development of products to keep families healthy through the use of safe and natural ingredients. Dr. Schwartz graduated from Duke University with a degree in biological chemistry and earned a Doctor of Medicine degree from the Duke University School of Medicine. Dr. Schwartz is a fellow in the American Academy of Family Physicians. He also chaired the Regional Pandemic Preparedness Committee from 2008 and 2005, and he is also the formulator of Flunata, an amazing product. It's homeopathic to combat the flu and the common cold. Always a pleasure to have him on the show. We're continuing our conversation here about a family safe room, setting one up in your home. So we talked about how long should someone stay in the family safe room, and some of the basic items and equipment. But can we talk about fever reducers for a minute, Dr. Schwartz? Because I think this is something very important that we need to address. I personally think they are a mistake based on a lot of things that I've read, mostly from Dr. Robert Mendelsohn, How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Doctor. But why would someone stop the immune system from doing its job?
Well, you know, it was a common tradition that goes way back. I remember the days in the emergency room, a small child would come in with 101 or 102 fever, maybe 103, and the first thing the nurses would want to do is a sponge bath, and then give a fever reducer. And then in 20 minutes, you'd come in and the child's shivering. And that was common practice. We all did it. It has, though, come into question. And I think it's a very legitimate question. And the reason is that viruses do not thrive well at higher temperatures.
Right. And especially the coronavirus, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, most viruses do not do well at high temperatures. There are a few that do. So, for example, bird flu, which is H5N1, it thrives in birds. And birds, as you may or may not know, they actually run a temperature which is about 4, 5, 6 degrees higher than humans.
Wow.
So that particular virus is geared for a high temperature, but most are not. You know, and the other principle is that most viruses that affect humans, they're very geared for the human itself. And if you change anything, almost, it makes it more difficult for the virus. It's highly geared for the human and the human's environment.
Wow. That's fascinating stuff. And you're such a great person to talk to about this. So much anxiety out there, so much fear. And this is something that I wanted to ask you. You know, it seems like half of the experts out there say that masks are only useful for the infected person to use in order to prevent non-infected people from getting sick. And the other half say it's a myth and that we should all be wearing face masks right now. What do you say, Dr. Schwartz?
Well, I have a lot to say on that. That's a great topic. Could I just say a couple more things on the fever reducers?
You have the floor.
So the one thing that's really important, I feel, to get out there is if you do use a fever reducer or a pain killer, as it were, for aches and pains, it would be best to stay away from Advil, Motrin, ibuprofen, what's called the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, especially for the coronavirus. And there's a number of reasons for that, and I can go into that later, but rather to use acetaminophen. And if you do have a fever and don't bring it down, one has to really focus on hydration. So because with the fever, you'll sweat more, obviously, and you'll lose fluid, and it's so much easier to get dehydrated.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that one has to focus on is give fluids.
Absolutely.
Instead of bringing it down. If it's really high, you definitely should bring it down somewhat because when you get over 104, especially for small children, they are at risk for febrile seizures.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever seen one, and I've seen many in the emergency room, they are not fun to deal with at all.
Well, yeah, no, and they're terrible. In fact, I was reading in this is my baby Bible, by the way. When I raised my children, Robert Mendelson, How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Doctor, he says, in fact number 12 about fevers, that high fevers do not cause convulsions. They result when the temperature rises at an extremely rapid rate, and that many parents are fearful of fevers because they, if you've ever witnessed one, like you said, that they're very, very scary.
Yes. In some respects, they could go hand in hand because they do rise at a very rapid rate.
Mm-hmm.
The child's fine 1 minute, and 30 minutes later, they've got a high fever, 104.5. So I agree with that.
Yeah, I can remember a high fever I had when I was a kid, and I actually, I still remember it to this day because my parents were like, I was in a very, I don't know what state, well, you would probably know. What is it when a child can't communicate with, you know everything that's going on in the room, but your fever's so high that you can't really speak or anything. Is there a name for that?
An aphasia, aphasia.
Okay.
Where they really can't speak.
Yeah. But I remember the fear on my parents' faces, and I'm sure I was having convulsions because I just remember it being so horrifying and watching my parents' face. But I survived it, you know? And isn't there a natural mechanism in the human body that prevents a fever from your fever from going above like 105 or 106 unless there's some sort of outside external heat source? Is that true?
Yes, the immune system is a complete network. It's an amazing network, and it's very complex, and it regulates itself. So it starts the fever, and it also controls the fever in general.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I think about febrile seizures is there are certain individuals, their nervous system is just a little more sensitive to a rapid rise. It's right. a sudden change. And it may not adapt quite as quickly as other nervous systems. So so in those situations, you're a little more prone toward it.
Anything else you want us to know about the fever?
No.
No?
That's it.
Okay. Well, let's go back to the face masks then. What are your thoughts about face masks?
Okay, so we were chairing the Pandemic Preparedness Committee, and one of the first things we looked at is what are the face masks that are used? What's the evidence that they work? How do they work? What are the studies that have been done? And the first thing that came about, this research was looked at in 2006 to 2007, was there's very little money being spent in that research, and there were actually very few high-quality studies. That has improved somewhat, although I would have to say, given the $2 trillion that the government is spending, a few million, tens of millions in that area, we would have a lot more data and a lot more, lot less confusion. That being said, there are some hard things that do come up when you do the research, and I can tell you about that in regard to surgical face masks and also N95 face masks.
Wow. Well, let me ask you this. You know, we keep hearing reports of how easily and quickly COVID-19 spreads, and it's so particularly dangerous to our immune system due to the fact that humans have never experienced this type of foreign invader, but yet many, if not most individuals, appear to be symptomatic. So how can we be both, and is it possible that some of us are already immune?
There may be a number of people that are immune. There may be a number of people that have had it. The United States was fairly slow to test, and there were a lot of people with upper respiratory infections in February. Could some of those have been coronavirus? Possibly so. The one thing that if you look at what can actually prevent the virus from coming into your airway system, if you look at the N95 mask and the surgical mask, the data on the surgical mask, and there was a very interesting study that was done where they put surgical masks over viral culture plates, and they would aerosolize the air. They would let it drop down, and they would have a surgical mask over the culture plate, and they wanted to see if the surgical mask would prevent the virus from getting onto the culture media and growing. And they first used one layer of the surgical mask, and they found, and they compared it to another viral culture plate with no surgical mask, and they found that there was absolutely no difference at all.
Wow.
They then repeated the study, and they put two layers of the surgical mask on and grew out the culture plates and found, again, there was virtually no difference at all.
Wow. Wow.
They did four layers, and they also found that there was no difference. And they were about to give up, but they went to eight layers, only with eight layers of the surgical mask did they actually see a reduction in the number of viruses that got onto the culture medium.
Wow. Wow. That is fascinating to hear. Okay. So one more question before we go to break. So based on your own crystal ball, Dr. Schwartz analysis, what does the world look like in 8 weeks from today as a result of this unprecedented movie-like pandemic event that we're all going through?
Well, in terms of what's happening now and with the interventions that we are seeing, I do believe that we will get a decent result in the United States. We will have, the hospitals will be full in the end of May and June, and they'll be continuing to deal with people with coronavirus through July, maybe August.
Wow.
The virus is running almost the same track as the pandemic flu of 1917, 1918. And that had its first wave in the spring, and then a much bigger wave in the fall.
Wow.
And fundamentally, because not as many people will get the virus this spring, hopefully, you'll have a susceptibility in the fall, and then more will be a subject. So we could get a second wave in the fall. In terms of pandemics, typically what you look at is the first 6 months. And the first 6 months is the most important because during the first 6 months, there aren't any vaccines. Mm-hmm. And it takes a while to make the vaccines. And vaccines is a tricky business because you have to pick the right seed strain, hope the virus doesn't mutate by the time you get it manufactured. But either way you do it, there's a six-month gap. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things that could be done in that 6 months. That's what we spent our entire last 4 or 5 meetings of our pandemic preparedness to mm-hmm. look at, because mm-hmm. that's where most of the mortality comes in and most of the morbidity in that first 6 months. And there are many things that can be done, and we can talk about that at some point when you're ready.
Well, I hope you'll jump back on the air with us soon. And it's so great. Thank you so much for the honor of being on the show with us today. We appreciate it so much. I know our listeners do. We'll talk to you soon, Dr. Schwartz. Hopefully next week you'll be able to jump on and we'll continue talking about this. You take care in the meantime.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, everyone, we're going to break. V. Capaldi, Paleo Boss Lady, is going to jump on quickly talking about navigating through anxiety, and Tina Burnett, exercise and your immune system. Stay tuned. You're listening to One Life Radio. Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis. I have V. Capaldi. She is the Paleo Boss Lady on the line. She is an award-winning TEDx speaker and health and wellness influencer. She is the founder of Paleo Boss Lady, Inc. and the Taking It to the Streets Tour and the BAM Van. I love this woman. She informs the community about how to get conscious in life and living using her own miracle journey and empire-building skills as inspiration for her work, working with companies and the community. V helps others to live their dreams. You can find her at her website, paleobosslady.com, or on Instagram at paleobosslady. We went a little long on that first segment because I thought the information was so critical right now. So we're a little short here on time. And I know you've got a commitment you have to meet to V, but how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. And it seems like, you know what, the schedule of life is just minute by minute at this point, really, you know?
Yeah.
So we just have to sort of roll with it, I feel like. And, you know, it's a worldwide pandemic we're dealing with. So it's crazy as it sounds to even say those words.
I know. And you're absolutely spot on, as usual. So can you share what you have been feeling during this lockdown personally?
I have to tell you, I have felt a lot of anxiety, mm-hmm. mostly. I really feel like, as far as like the way I live my life, how conscious I am about food and movement and diet and lifestyle, like I'm fairly prepared for, you know, presenting the best version of myself mm-hmm. in the face of a pandemic. But that doesn't stop anxiety. And
yeah.
The world just seems to be spinning out of control. And, you know, I do have a daughter who's expecting my first grandchild, and that's very scary. So for me, and I feel like a lot of the people that, you know, I interact with on social media and with my brand, anxiety seems to be at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm going through a family crisis myself at the same time. And so it is. My anxiety's been higher than it's been since I was probably 19 years old, and I'm just trying to naturally deal with it. But what have you been doing personally to manage your anxiety? What have you been taking or doing yourself?
You know, I'm the kind of person that I take a lot of supplements, all working with a naturopath and through testing, you know, but I would only do them 5 days a week just because I would be like, you know, I'll give myself 2 days off. Don't ask me why. Now I take them 7 days a week. It's like, you know what? There's no days off right now.
yeah.
Literally. The other thing is I'm taking time to do activities where my mind is busy, but not thinking about current life. So puzzles, gardening feels really good because for me, I'm basically turning scraps am rooting them in my kitchen, and then I have a community garden across the street. So playing in the dirt, taking naps. I don't take naps. I take naps every day now.
That's awesome.
I need them.
Yeah. No, I can relate. I can relate. When things get a little overwhelming, I just want to go into my biscuit and cuddle up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And really, like, going outside of my patio when the sun is shining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I live in California, so we normally have typically beautiful sunny days. But up until just 2 days ago, we had rain every day for, like, 3 weeks. I'm not complaining, but we didn't have a lot of sun. So now when I'm making sure that, oh, I see the sun coming in my sliding door, I'm going to take a 10-minute break and go sit outside on my patio and just get some vitamin D, because I'm not really outside that much, mm-hmm. like at all.
Yeah, no, a lot of people, well, and of course, the vitamin D is critical for your immune system right now. And if you're not getting sunshine, you definitely should be supplementing with a couple of thousand IUs every single day. I would say more based on nutritionists that have mm-hmm. said up to 5,000 to 10,000 a day during high levels of stress and no sunshine. And just, you know, with all the germs that are out there right now with the coronavirus, it's kind of scary.
Oh, yeah. And I take with working with a naturopath, and because I have multiple sclerosis, I take 10,000 IUs a day.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's not something you should just randomly do, but like right. I normally do. It's interesting because a couple of naturopaths and wellness change makers and, you know, the people that you have on your show have put out what they recommend. We take supplementally vitamin, you know, C, vitamin D,
mm-hmm.
selenium, zinc, things like that. And I'm grateful to say all of those are in my normal everyday program. And that's what I was saying. Like, I feel like I've made a lot of really good choices, but I feel like the psychological anxiety, like things are happening outside of my control. Like, I just stopped listening to the news. I do not listen. If the TV's on, it's on mindless stuff. It's no news, no CNN, no president, no mm-hmm, nothing, because mm-hmm. I'm doing my part and I'm staying in the house, and I've been quarantined for over 3 weeks now. And, you know,
wow.
I'm doing my part, A, because that's the lens that I live with. But I also do have a daughter who's pregnant. And when the time comes, I hope to be able to be involved in that delivery mm-hmm. process. And I think it's going to require how little I interact with the outside. And I walk my dog only 3 times a day. I never interact with anyone. My hands are always covered. I bleach. I wipe down. I'm doing everything mm-hmm. I'm supposed to. I have a mask. I mean, the whole thing. But I get my food delivered once a week. Like, I feel like I'm getting exposed. So even though I'm wiping my food down, like, mm-hmm. how sure can we be? I don't really know, but I'm trying my hardest. I will say, you know, for me, CBD has helped. And I know that you guys are big proponents of CBD, but I have increased my use of just like supplements. I consider, you know, CBD is a supplement. I've increased my use of that, and I'm actually eating it a lot, like throughout the day as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, I took my Ned CBD oil this morning. I love their new product, and they're targeted towards women, by the way. They're specially formulated. Mm-hmm. Check them out at helloned.com. It's a great, great company. But so you got to go, because you've got an appointment in just 2 minutes. So I'm going to let you go, and we'll talk to you soon. You take care of yourself. Sending lots of love and positive energy from Dallas, Texas. Take care of yourself, V.
You too. Take care of her.
All right. Okay.
Bye,
all right. She's amazing, you guys. Follow her at on Instagram at Paleo Boss Lady, or her website, paleobosslady.com. We've got Tina Burnett coming up. Exercise in your immune system. You need it. You need it anyway. And there's even more benefits now with your immune system. So stay tuned. We're going to talk all about it. Ronaldo and I are here. Call us 214-787-1190. You're listening to One Life Radio.
To go to sleep when I got you next to me.
Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis. I want to let you know that you can go to our website, oneliferadio.com, to download and listen to our podcast and subscribe to our newsletter. You can also listen to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify, or you can go right to iHeartMedia.com to listen live, or download the free iHeartRadio app and listen to us from anywhere in the world. Okay, I've got Tina Burnett on the line. We're going to be talking about exercise and your immune system. I've known this woman. I call all my friends girls, but I've known Tina for years.
That.
I know, we like it, right? We like to be called girls.
Yeah.
forever young, right? Forever 21.
Right, I'll always be a girl.
Oh my gosh. I don't know about forever 21, maybe forever 31. My 20s were a little rough, but Tina Burnett has a bachelor's degree, or a bachelor's of kinesiology. She is a certified strength and conditioning specialist. She's also a certified expert in biomechanics, and she is part of the Aerobics and Fitness Association of America. She's been in the fitness industry for over 30 years, teaching cardiovascular classes at several of Dallas's top studios and health clubs, as well as instructing and developing resistance training programs for individuals and the groups in the gym and in the home. And she has been named the top female personal trainer in DFW by the Personal Trainers Hall of Fame. She's great at what she does. I love this woman. You can contact her at tbfitnesspro@gmail.com. That's tbfitnesspro@gmail.com or on Instagram, tbfitnesspro. Okay, Tina, today we're talking about exercise and your immune system. I've been doing pretty well, getting on my spin bike, lifting weights, doing whatever I can to, you know, boost my immune system. But what type of exercise will actually build your immune system?
So here's the deal is there's been studies done, not enough studies to really show if there are certain exercises that or that exercise in general increases your immunity to certain illnesses. But what the studies that I did find and read through, what they do find is that habitual moderate exercise, including cardiovascular exercise and weight training, can improve immune regulation. And one study did show that moderate and vigorous intensity aerobic exercise in bouts of less than 60 minutes in duration did create a physiological change that showed it can improve immune defense activity and metabolic health, as well as creating an anti-inflammatory influence.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've exercised my whole life. I'm a trainer, of course, but even when I was younger, I mean, I started, you know, exercising, outside of sports when I was in high school. So, and I'd rarely get sick, you know, knock on wood.
Well, yeah.
Right now, but I know for a fact that it's helped me avoid being sick, and so I think that there's just not enough information to really prove a lot of this, but they are finding these results.
Mm-hmm.
So it needs to be. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Finish. I'm sorry.
Well, it needs to be, you know, not over exercising. Is the key.
Well, what happens when you overexercise? You probably tax your immune system more than you should, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So what can zap your immune system is the heavy, long duration exercises such as marathon running and, you know, triathlons and, you know, Ironmans and all that kind of stuff. So overtraining is can definitely weaken your immune system, There's actually, like, when athletes are doing intensified training and competition, illness risk is highly increased during those periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
So the important thing is to avoid high exercise training loads and, just overtraining.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely, it's linked to immune dysfunction, inflammation, oxidative stress, and muscle damage.
Mm-hmm. I pulled an article about how just the right amount of exercise can strengthen your immune system. And it's really kind of crazy. In that article, there was a large study that was done, I guess, in Hong Kong several years ago. It says a large study showed that mild to moderate exercise, just what you were saying, performed about 3 times a week, reduced the risk of dying during the Hong Kong flu outbreak in 1998, and that the Hong Kong study was performed on 24,656 Chinese adults who died during this outbreak. Kind of scary, but
yeah.
There's a lot that you can do, and exercise is one of them. And it's because I know when I get on my spin bike, you know, only about 20 minutes total time, 2 minutes warm up, 2 minute, what do you call it when you not slow down, but what's it called when you're
an interval.
No. Like at the end of it, when
the
you
cool
just
down.
Cool down. There cool you down. Go. Thank you. I had a brain bubble there. But yeah, the cool down, 2 minutes warm up, 2 minute cool down. And then I'm up in the saddle almost the whole time. If I get too tired, then I sit down and take a rest. But I don't push myself to any extreme measures. And I think that's probably the key here, don't you?
I do, absolutely. And as you're saying that, I'm just thinking back in the days when I used to do long distance running. I mean, I did marathons, I got into triathlons, and I did all that. And I will tell you that during those years, I actually was getting sick more often.
Yeah.
I would come down with sinus infections and, you know, not like flu, high fever stuff, but I can remember during those years, I did get sick often. And when I quit doing all that, you know, I went through a period where I was obsessive exercising, you know, I'd cycle and I'd teach aerobics and I'd, you know, run and, you know, I was getting sick more often. And now that I'm not doing any of that, crazy overdoing it, you know, I just don't. I'm healthier.
I had the same experience. Yeah, I used to get sick a lot in my 20s, and I think it's because I, like you, you know, I was a mad woman. I was just doing all this crazy exercise, too much exercise. I mean, I used to do 2 triathlons a week sometimes. I mean, it was just ridiculous. But I don't know. For some reason, that felt it felt good to me. You know, to decrease anxiety and be fit. You know, when you're young like that, you're kind of young and dumb. You know, you just are.
That's what I was just thinking. Yeah, because we were young and dumb, and you know, it comes to a point where it's a way to, you know, get out and try to avoid, you know, the issues that you should be dealing with. You know what I'm saying? Mentally and you know, someone I go out and run for, you know, 2 hours,
right?
Or cycle for 4 hours. And but I was also struggling with some psychological things. So I think that they kind of go hand in hand, you know?
Right.
And at this time right now with the way, you know, with the pandemic, I mean, I was just thinking about what V was saying. I was listening and I listened to the whole first part of the show, and it was really great information with the doctor. And,
yeah.
But, you know, getting outside at this time, you know, I've been walking my dogs every day. They're loving that we're here all the time because they get walked a lot.
And, I know, right?
You know?
Yeah.
It's calming, and it's just like, you know, we need to reduce our stress and anxiety. And I think, like V said, getting outside, getting some vitamin D. So I think in this time that we're doing right now, the best thing we can do as far as exercise is try to get out more. I mean, I work out. I have a, you know, room like you do. I have some weight. You've worked out with me in my workout room. But I open my patio doors, and I do some of it out on the patio as long as the weather's nice. So I'm kind of going in and out, and it makes it so much more enjoyable and better for just anxiety and stress.
You actually bring up a good point. And one of the things that was recommended when I was doing my research about the family safe room is you need to open the windows and the doors every day in your home and let fresh air in. We really need that. And you know, people, we didn't even have air conditioning and central heating years and years ago. And up north, we didn't. A lot of people still, you know, in upstate New York, where it's so doggone cold most of the year, a lot of places still don't have it. But fresh air is so good for you. And Ronaldo, I'm looking at you. You're shaking your head. What are you doing to stay in shape right now during all this?
I'm actually starting to get more in fit now. I'm taking this time to take advantage of that.
Good for you.
I was doing a little bit of cardio and just some basic calisthenics.
Yeah, yeah. No, and we all need to pay attention to this. We do, because as you heard Dr. Schwartz say, we've got a long haul here, potentially. We're looking out through the summer and potentially this coming back in the fall, which is, I was kind of unnerved when I heard that. I was like, holy smokes.
Well, I heard my husband heard that on the list watching the news, that it could come back even worse in the fall, or at least be extended out through the fall. And I think about, you know, just think about how that's going to affect everyone in the businesses and the kids' schools.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's scary, but I just think, you know, I think it's important right now that we have the opportunity to get plenty of rest. I mean, I've literally been sometimes I'm in my bed and I'm not sleeping the whole time, but 10 to 12 hours. And I wake up and I'm like, it's like 8:30. I'm like, how did I sleep so much?
You know,
but it's like, I'm letting myself do it. And, you know, and I'll think, oh, I should get up. I need to get up. And I'm like, actually, I'm just going to lay here and just chill and relax for a minute and, you know, read a book or something, which is not my personality normally.
Well,
but I think right now, just sleep, proper nutrition, like the doctor said, hydration is so key in stress management. And So get your exercise. Don't overdo it, but do, you know, take your dog for a walk. Do some meditation. Right. Do some journaling. Do some yoga. You know, we can't get a massage, but,
right,
you know, if you can foam roll, which is what I've been doing, but...
Let me interrupt you for a minute. So, you know, I've got this question here that I wanted to ask you. We've only got about, I'm going to say 45 seconds, but before we end the show. But why do we need recovery days quickly, and what counts as a recovery day?
Well, your muscles have to have time to repair after exercise, primarily intense exercise, such as weight training, or if you're doing, I know there's a lot of videos out there of people doing HIIT workouts that you can do at home that's just body weight. I did one yesterday. I did my own little body weight HIIT workout, mm-hmm, and only did it for 30 or 40 seconds. But when you do those types of workouts, your muscles, you know, get taxed, and you do need to give them time to recover and repair themselves. And also, the recovery days help to lower cortisol levels, which helps immunity.
Right.
So, I've overtrained, what we were just talking about. I've overtrained and overtrained, and I did get sick more often. So I just think it's important that you take the time. We have time today, these days, to relax and rest and,
yeah,
and get your extra sleep and let your body recover, because we are under stress. And so stress levels are typically going to be higher. And those recovery days will help get that stress level down and help your immune system can keep you strong.
Absolutely. And eat a piece of dark chocolate, too, because that can help alleviate symptoms of anxiety. And it's got a lot of magnesium and things in it that are really, really healthy for you. Tina Burnett, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. Take care of yourself out there. Stay safe. Love you so much. Sending you lots of positive energy here from the One Life Radio studios.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to be here every day that we can throughout this. Just me and Ronaldo hanging out here at iHeartMedia. Everyone, you know what? You get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. So you know what? Get out there today. Rest, relax, eat well, exercise, and make the most of it. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Stay tuned.